Our gospel lesson this morning can be found on page 903 in your pew Bibles. We'll be reading from Matthew, the 24th chapter. We now have gone to also to a new cycle of readings for the lectionary. So now we're on cycle A. And so the gospel lessons will focus on Matthew in the year ahead. Jesus had been speaking about great changes that the people will see. He pleads for active waiting because the timing of these momentous changes cannot be predicted with any precision. The apocalyptical imagery evokes a sense of urgent expectancy for what God has hope for these keepers of his law. Matthew points up the unexpectedness of the Son of Man's return, but he is sure that he will return. The old rabbis said this: three things come unexpectedly: Messiah, the discovery of treasure, and a scorpion. If Advent is a time of preparation for Christmas, it is also a reminder of being always ready. Let us now listen for good news according to Matthew. But about that day and hour no one knows, neither the angels of heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. For as the days of Noah were, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day Noah entered the ark, and they knew nothing until the flood came and swept them all away, so too will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then two will be in the field, one will be taken and one will be left. Two women will be grinding meal together, one will be taken and one will be left. Keep awake, therefore, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. But understand this: if the owner of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour. May we be blessed in the hearing of this word. Pray with me, please. Open our minds, open our hearts, open our ears, O Lord, to hear what you have to say to us in this season through this word. Speak to us, O Lord, for your servants are listening. Amen. Wake up. Two little words most of us absolutely hate to hear. Wake up. Signals the end of pleasant slumber. Wake up. Calls us to return to harsh reality. Wake up. Says that it's time to be alert and to be active. Wake up. My mother's been gone almost 13 years, and I can still hear her. Stephen, Alan, wake up. Wake up. You know, I Googled wake up and I got tons of hits. What most interested me were the numbers of books with wake up and just wake up in their titles. 44,000 plus books. Now, by and large, the titles had to do with wake up calls. Wake up call because there are poor reading scores. Wake up calls because there's plagiarism in our school systems. Wake up because there's poverty of the two-thirds world that we've got to do something about, and so forth. Wake up calls. Others had a similar content but employed the wake up and smell the coffee motif. In other words, you're drowsy while something is happening right in front of you. Wake up! Wake up, then, also carries the idea of watch out with it. Watch out. Be vigilant. Be alert. Wake up. That is what we hear in the texts from Romans and from Matthew today, and it's the great theme of the Advent season. Liturgical scholar Gabe Huck observes, a character in one of J.D. Salinger's short stories says that the most important word in the Bible is watch. That person would love Advent, and especially the gospel. Be on the watch, stay awake, watch with a sharp eye, look around you, be on guard. Why would watch be anyone's favorite notion. How do we watch? What are we watching for? What would help us to stay awake and watch? Huck's questions are quite appropriate. I think we've become a nation that is more accustomed to watching in the last few years. We're certainly on the alert in airports and when traveling, if for no other reason than annoyance at times, and especially when traveling abroad. You tend to be a little bit more when you're moving through the airports. And in fact, there are some who would like us to believe that this increased watching and the world situation, shaky economy, growing violence, a general sense of unease, are all signs of the times leading to the Lord's imminent return. I am not so sure they're correct. The early church expected the Lord's parousia, his second coming or return. They expected that was imminent, that it was near at hand. And we can certainly catch that feeling in the reading from Romans. The night is far gone. The day is near. And it's there in the Matthew passage, too. Keep awake, therefore, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. Many were no doubt disappointed when the parousia was delayed, as I am sure that others who predict its arrival, like the Jehovah's Witnesses, who have predicted that it was going to come every time from 1914 to 1990, the gentleman that runs Family Radio that says it was in 1994, now it's going to be in 2009, or for that matter, the Seventh-day Adventists who sold the followers of the chap who came up with that movement, who sold everything they had, bought white robes, and were standing on a hill in upstate New York for 2 weeks. And Jesus didn't show up. That would have a tendency to say, well, and the gentleman correctly said, well, my calculations were off. Well, I should say so. Especially when Jesus says, it's not given for me to know. If Jesus doesn't know, you think you're going to know? I think that's the point. Quite honestly, I don't think that that's what God is about. Let me explain. Both of these texts use apocalyptic language. Apocalyptic is a literary genre that is quite complex. It's very rich and quite often misunderstood. It involves a vision of the world to come. As the late Roman Catholic biblical scholar Raymond Brown wrote, the vision of the supernatural world or of the future helps to interpret present circumstances on earth, which are almost always tragic. So apocalyptic is vibrant, intense, expectant language that's designed to wake us up. To wake us up and to get us going on the right track. It is also language that is designed to comfort people going through rough times. Apocalyptic says, hang in there. Help is on the way. Apocalyptic, however, is not designed necessarily to be productive of anything but a heightened sense of awareness or to give us comfort. John L. Mackenzie, another biblical scholar, points out, apocalypse is the cry of the helpless, who are borne passively by events which they cannot influence, much less control. The cry of the helpless is often vindictive, expressing impotent rage at reality. Apocalyptic rage is a flight from reality, a plea to God to fulfill their wishes and prove them right and the other wrong. Apocalyptic believers could hardly think the saying, "Go make disciples of all nations," was addressed to them. Had apocalyptic believers dominated the church since the first century, there would have been no missions to unbelievers, no schools, no hospitals, no orphanages, no almsgiving. The helpless cannot afford to think of such enterprises. They can only await the act of God and then complain because the act is so long delayed. The Gospels and epistles, rather, tell the believers that they are the act of God. There's the point. We are the act of God. Don't go worrying about the second coming until you've started to live out the first. I am absolutely convinced that the Lord is not coming back until we get it right. And we don't. We don't love each other as we should. We don't behave toward each other as we should. We don't do the ministry that we're to do. We don't. So why should he come back? We're not ready. We're not ready. So what we're to wake up to watch for, to be on the alert for, is right there in Mackenzie's last line. The Gospels and the Epistles rather tell the believers that they are the act of God. The time of the Lord's coming, as Paul tells the Romans, is a kairos moment. That is, it's not, in case you ever wondered if I had one in here, I do. It's not clock time. This is chronos. This is chronos. God's time, the right time, the appropriate time, is kairos time. So, and it's like one commercial that used to say that every time is time for consuming that product. Kairos says every moment is about our being and our acting as God's people. Advent then serves as a wake-up call for us as we come near to the end of one calendar and approach a new one. It reminds us that we're to wake up and function as God's people, making a difference in the world, making a difference in the lives around us. Each day that we have, my dears, is precious. Every moment is not to be wasted because God is in the moment. And in that moment, we not only have the ability to touch and be touched by God, we also have the ability to touch and to change and to live toward others as we live toward the other. And our own lives can be changed too. Now, Paul says we should put on Jesus Christ, get ourselves dressed in Jesus. And he talks about armor. Well, the armor that he's telling us to put on, the principles that will protect us each day, are those virtues that lead us into God's life. Remember, the word virtue implies moral excellence. It implies character. So our armor then are what we call the theological virtues. And we call them the theological virtues because they lead us into God's life. And those virtues are, and I bet you know them and never knew that they were the theological virtues. And now you'll be able to drop this at a cocktail party or a Christmas party and people will think you're incredibly spiritually learned. Anybody want to guess? Faith. Hope. Love. See, you knew it the whole time. Faith, hope, love. Those are the theological virtues. Now, the sacrament that we're about to share today is a tangible, visible reminder of those virtues. And it is a sign to us of God's presence to us and God's care for us in this moment and in every moment. And let me once again remind you of what we are called to be as a result of that. As Augustine said to his people in Hippo Regis way back in the 4th century, you are what you eat. You partake of Christ and you become Christ. So after eating at this table, go out and live like the one who now you have put on, whose life has now become part of your life. Go live like Christ. Because that is what we're to wake up, watch out, and do. May it ever be so. Amen.